Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Imagine this, okay? Years, maybe decades, of just bewildering symptoms, countless doctor's visits, I mean, maybe hundreds, and this huge pile of unanswered questions just keeps growing. But what if, after all that struggle, a single scientific breakthrough could finally crack the case? Not just for one person, but potentially for hundreds, maybe even thousands facing similar battles. For families dealing with ultra-rare genetic diseases, getting a diagnosis often feels, well, almost impossible. Like trying to find one specific unique snowflake during a massive blizzard. It's especially tough when each case looks so different. But things are changing. Cutting-edge genomics is really undergoing a big transformation right now. We're shifting away from looking at just one patient at a time.
Yeah, that painstaking individual search.
Exactly. And moving towards a powerful, collaborative joint approach. It's actually revolutionizing how we find answers. Mm. So our mission today is to take a deep dive into a really groundbreaking paper. It showcases precisely how this joint genomic analysis is making diagnoses possible for these incredibly diverse, ultra-rare conditions. Oh. We want to give you a kind of shortcut to understanding this vital and, let's face it, pretty complex field.
And yeah, before we really dig into the science, it's so important to acknowledge the massive team effort here. Today, we really celebrate the work of Shilpa Nadimpali Kobrin, Mikhaile Molgovin, and Shamil Arsunyev, and really the entire Undiagnosed Diseases Network, the UDN Consortium. Their collective dedication has been absolutely key in advancing how we diagnose these super challenging genetic cases. They've truly pushed the field forward.
It's true. And, you know, for way too long, patients with these kinds of ultra-rare diseases have been stuck on what people call the diagnostic odyssey.
Mm-hmm.
And that really captures it, doesn't it? It's this relentless journey, years of testing, sometimes invasive tests, seeing specialist after specialist.
Right, just a constant rotation.
And still, frustratingly, no clear answers.
Yeah.
Now, historically, trying to pin down the genetic cause usually meant, well, studying inheritance patterns in big families, if you could find them,
mm-hmm.
or maybe analyzing small groups of patients who seem to have very similar symptoms. But those older methods, they hit limitations pretty fast. Like, what happens if a disease just pops up spontaneously in one person? No family history to go on.
Yeah, a sporadic case.
Or what if there's only one known patient? Or maybe just a tiny handful scattered across the globe. In those situations, you just don't have the statistical power.
Right. Looking at one person's genome alone isn't enough.
Exactly. It was a huge barrier, leaving so many families kind of in limbo, without answers or hope. But what's really exciting is this major shift happening in human Mendelian genetics. It's moving towards what you could really call a data science approach.
Okay, data science and genetics. Tell me more.
So instead of that case-by-case approach, researchers are now analyzing these large and critically phenotypically diverse cohorts altogether. Phenotypically diverse meaning.
Hmm.
Lots of different symptoms and presentations.
Precisely. And this is where the Undiagnosed Diseases Network, the UDN, comes in as such a game changer. It's this powerful network of clinical centers, research labs, experimental facilities all across the U.S. And their whole focus is on these extremely tough to solve cases, the ones that are very likely genetic but have stumped everyone else. And the UDN cohort itself is, well, it's pretty unique. We're talking over 4,200 individuals, and crucially, they've all had whole genome sequencing.
So their entire genetic blueprint read out.
The whole thing. And their clinical pictures are incredibly varied: neurological issues, musculoskeletal problems, immune disorders, endocrine, cardiac, you name it. Plus, there's this incredibly detailed phenotypic data collected for every single patient. They use something called human phenotype ontology terms, HPO terms.
HPO terms. Like a super specific barcode for each symptom.
That's a great way to put it. A standardized, incredibly detailed way to label every single clinical feature. And remember, these are patients who've already been through the ringer. They've exhausted all other diagnostic options. So their combined data, the genomes, plus these detailed phenotypes, it's just an invaluable resource for finding new genetic links.
Okay, so you have this incredibly rich data set, this tapestry of diverse cases from the UDN. How did the researchers actually start to pick it apart? What were the tools they used?
Right. That gets us to the core innovation here. It's a new software suite they developed called ROMIDES that stands for Rare Mendelian Disease Enrichment Statistics. And what ROMIDES does is fundamentally different. It uses a genotype-first approach.
Okay. Genotype-first. That sounds significant. What does that mean in practice, and why is it such a big deal for these ultra-rare conditions?
It really flips the traditional process on its head. Instead of starting with symptoms and asking what genes might cause these symptoms, Romedy starts with the genes.
Ah, I see.
It asks, across this huge group of diverse patients, what unusual genetic patterns stand out? Are there specific genes showing up with rare variants more often than we'd expect by chance? Then, after identifying those candidate genes based purely on the genetic data,
then they look at the symptoms of the patients who carry those variants.
Exactly. They see if the patients sharing variants in a candidate gene also share similar clinical features. It's like finding a specific genetic signature in the crowd before you even know what the defined features of that group are.
That makes so much sense for ultra-rare diseases, where you might not have a group with obviously similar symptoms to start with.
Precisely. Romedy's helps uncover those hidden connections that might be missed if you only look at symptoms first.
Let's let the DNA lead the investigation. And I gather Romedy's focuses on two main types of genetic variants, de novo mutations and compound heterozygous variants. Can you just quickly remind us what those are?
Sure. De novo mutations, these are brand new genetic changes. They appear for the first time in a child, not inherited from either parent. They're often implicated in severe early onset disorders.
Okay, the spontaneous ones.
Right. And compound heterozygous variants, this is when someone inherits two different rare, potentially damaging variants in the same gene, one copy from their mother and one from their father.
Got it. Two different hits to the same gene.
Exactly. And linking either of these patterns to a disease just by looking at one patient is incredibly difficult. But Romedy's is specifically built to find signals across many patients. Now, for the de novo analysis, there's a tool called Romedy's.E. It uses really advanced statistical models, highly accurate mutation rate models, like one called Roulette.
Roulette, interesting name.
Yeah, yeah. It helps calculate the odds of a specific mutation happening purely by chance. It combines this with cutting-edge AI tools like AlphaMisense or Primate AI 3D, which predict how damaging a variant might be to the protein it encodes.
So predicting the functional impact.
Right. And here's a key technical point. Romedy's.DN uses an analytical approach, not simulations or permutations like older methods often did.
Meaning it calculates the statistics directly.
Exactly. Think of it like solving an equation directly versus running thousands of what-if scenarios. The direct calculation is incredibly fast. It can process huge data sets in seconds, and it gives very precise statistical results. Plus, it's flexible. It can incorporate different types of variants, including rare intronic splice-altering variants.
The ones hidden in the non-coding bits.
Yes, the ones deep inside introns that can mess up how the gene messages splice together. Whole genome sequencing picks these up, but they're often totally missed if you only do exome sequencing. Romedy's can factor those in.
Okay, that covers the de novo side. What about the compound heterozygous analysis?
So there are tools called Romedy's CH and Romedy's END. Analyzing rare inherited variants is tricky because you have to account for population structure, how related different people in the cohort might be. Romedy's IND takes a cool individual-based approach. For each person, it calculates a kind of rarity score for the variants found in every single one of their genes.
A personal ranking of suspicious genes.
Sort of, yeah. It ranks the genes within that single person's genome based on how unusual their combination of rare variants is, helping pinpoint the most likely candidates for that specific individual. And then, going even broader, there's the pathway analysis. This looks for connections beyond single genes. It groups patients with similar symptoms.
Like all the patients with immune problems, for example.
Exactly. And then it asks, among the candidate genes and known diagnostic genes found in this group, are there any biological pathways that are statistically overrepresented? It helps reveal common underlying mechanisms.
Wow, that's layers upon layers of analysis. But you mentioned something earlier that sounded truly revolutionary, its ability to work with summary statistics. Why is that such a practical game changer?
Oh, it's huge. Absolutely huge for collaboration. Think about all the different rare disease research groups around the world. Each might have data on a small number of patients.
Right, these silos of data.
Yeah, exactly. And trying to pool that individual level patient data is often a logistical and ethical nightmare. You have privacy regulations, complex data sharing agreements. It can grind research to a halt.
Been there.
Right. But Romedy's can perform its analysis using just summary statistics, things like variant frequencies, how many de novo mutations were seen in a gene across the whole cohort. all de-identified.
So no individual patient data needs to be shared.
Correct. Researchers can effectively combine the statistical power of many different cohorts from different countries, different institutions, without ever sharing sensitive individual data. It breaks down those silos.
That really opens the door for global collaboration on a massive scale.
It really does. It accelerates gene discovery like never before.
Okay, so Romedies, this computational powerhouse, flags these candidate genes using all this clever statistics. What happens next? How do you go from a candidate gene to an actual diagnosis?
That's where the human expertise comes back in, but in a very structured way. There's a systematic clinical review process. Experts meticulously evaluate each candidate gene flagged by Romedies. They looked closely at the patient's specific symptoms and compare them to what's known about that gene.
Checking for a match.
Yes. They look at known disease associations, any functional studies done in lab models like flies or mice, where the gene is normally expressed in the body, how conserved the gene is across evolution.
All the biological context.
Right. And they use a standardized protocol based on the Klingon framework to score the evidence. It's semi-quantitative, ensuring that different experts evaluate candidates consistently. It adds rigor to that crucial step.
Okay, let's get to the results then. The methods are impressive. The tech is clearly cutting edge. But when they unleashed Romedies on all that UDN data, what did they actually find? What were the discoveries that made a difference for patients?
The findings were really significant, especially from the de novo analysis. They identified several genes like KIP21A, BAP1, RHOA, CACNN1C, CO4A1, NOTCH1. These either led directly to diagnoses or were incredibly strong clinical matches for previously undiagnosed patients.
So finding the answers.
Finding answers. And some fascinating new links emerged. Take the gene LRRC7. Two different patients turned up with de novo missense variants in this gene, which is mostly expressed in the brain. Now, their symptoms weren't identical, but they shared key features like hypotonia, that's low muscle tone and developmental delay. One also had issues like nystagmus, involuntary eye movements, and balance problems. The other had an ataxic gait.
Overlapping but distinct.
Exactly. And finding these two cases, linked by variants in the same gene, helps solidify LRRC7's connection to a newly emerging neurodevelopmental disorder.
Wow. So connecting the dots across patients.
Precisely. Another great example is H4C5. This is a histone gene. Two patients had de novo variants in H4C5. Interestingly, simpler analysis methods hadn't flagged this gene before, but both patients had quite similar severe presentations. Developmental delays starting in infancy, distinct facial features, speech difficulties. Finding these two cases led to new diagnoses for both. It really shows Romedies' power to dig deeper.
So it's finding things others missed.
Yes. And one more, ZNetF865. Here, they found de novo truncating variants, ones likely to completely break the gene in two patients with neurodevelopmental delay. And crucially, their features showed a really compelling overlap with a whole series of over 10 other patients reported elsewhere with variants in the same gene. That provides really strong evidence that ZNF865 is a disease-causing gene.
Okay, strong evidence building up. You mentioned Romedies can use deep intronic variants too. Did that lead to new discoveries here?
That's an interesting point. While the capability is there and important for completeness, in this specific analysis of the UDN cohort, using only the intronic splice variant feature didn't identify any new significantly recurring candidate genes. But it remains a vital part of the toolkit for future analyses and other cohorts.
Got it. And what about the other side, the compound heterozygous variants? Did they find genes recurring across patients there?
Well, as we kind of expected, for ultra-rare conditions in a diverse cohort like the UDN, which isn't heavily consanguineous, they didn't find specific genes with compound heterozygous variants recurring across multiple unrelated patients. That pattern is just too rare.
Makes sense.
But the individual-level analysis, Romedies ID, was still really powerful for specific cases. It successfully re-identified 5 diagnoses that were already known through other means.
Validating the method.
Exactly. And it newly pinpointed AKEDM as the cause of MCAD deficiency in one patient who hadn't been diagnosed before. And here's maybe the most compelling new finding from the compound heterozygous side, highlighting the power of combining whole genome sequencing with Romedies. It involves the gene MAD11.
Okay.
So there was an undiagnosed patient with neurodegeneration, developmental delay, brain abnormalities. Romedies AND flagged compound heterozygous variants in MAD11 as the top candidate for this individual. But here's the kicker. These variants weren't in the coding sequence. They were deep inside an intron. The prediction was that they would cause what's called a cryptic splice donor game, basically tricking the cell's machinery into splicing the gene message incorrectly.
A hidden defect.
And they proved it. They did RNA sequencing using the patient's blood sample and experimentally confirmed that this aberrant splicing was actually happening.
Wow.
This is a variant that standard exome sequencing would almost certainly have missed entirely. It really underscores the value of looking at a whole genome and having sophisticated tools like Romedies to interpret it.
Okay, that ME11 case is fascinating. But you also mentioned pathway analysis. This is where it gets really interesting, right? Looking beyond single genes to whole biological systems. What came out of that?
Yeah, the pathway analysis provided some really cool insights, connecting dots in a different way. So they looked at a group of 19 patients who all had immunological disorders. The analysis found a significant enrichment, basically, more hits than expected by chance, in genes belonging to the immunoproteasome complex.
Okay, a specific cellular machine involved in immunity.
Exactly. Now, within that group, one patient already had a known diagnosis involving a gene called POMP, which is part of this complex, but Remedies also highlighted a candidate variant in PSMB8, another gene in the same complex, in a previously undiagnosed patient. And clinically, both of these patients had very similar severe immunodeficiency phenotypes. So the pathway analysis revealed the shared underlying mechanism.
Connecting two different genes through their shared function.
Precisely. Another great example. A cluster of 15 neurological patients. The pathway analysis flagged three candidate genes, CACNNC, GABR3, and a new candidate, HCN4, as being enriched in, believe it or not, the taste transduction pathway.
Taste, that seems unexpected for neurological symptoms.
Right. It sounds odd initially, but when they looked at the three patients who carried variants in these specific genes, all three shared striking clinical features: seizures, speech delays, severe hypotonia. So even though the pathway label might seem strange out of context, it highlighted a group of functionally related genes where disruptions led to remarkably similar severe neurological outcomes. It shows how variants in related genes can converge on a similar clinical picture.
That's powerful. So summing up the impact.
In total, this combined Romedies analysis applied to the UDN cohort led directly to 5 new confirmed diagnoses and identified 3 additional putative diagnoses, meaning very strong candidates in known disease-causing genes. That's a significant number of answers for families who had none before.
That really is significant progress. So, stepping back now, after digging into all these methods and findings, what's the big picture takeaway? What does this study really mean for how we approach rare disease diagnosis going forward?
I think the study marks a really important transition point. It signals a move away from rare disease genetics being primarily driven by individual case analysis and clinical intuition.
The sort of detective work on one patient at a time.
Exactly. Towards a framework where robust statistical inference across large cohorts becomes primary evidence for causality. It's bringing the kind of statistical rigor commonly used in studying common diseases into the rare disease space.
Which is crucial as data sets get bigger.
Absolutely critical. As we sequence more and more genomes, we need highly accurate, really well-calibrated statistical methods like Romedies, because even tiny errors in the statistical models can lead to a flood of false positive findings when you're dealing with millions of variants across thousands of people. Precision is key. And this study, by analyzing this diverse, moderately sized UDN cohort so effectively, really demonstrates the huge promise of joint analysis, both at the gene level and the pathway level.
Are there still limitations, though? The things these methods don't cover yet?
Oh, definitely. The authors are clear about that. The current Romedies framework doesn't yet incorporate all types of functional variants. For example, variants in untranslated regions of genes or in non-coding RNA genes or variants between genes. We often lack accurate functional prediction scores for those, so they're harder to model statistically.
Okay, so still some blind spots.
Yes. And also, these methods primarily analyze small variants detected by short-read sequencing. They don't currently handle large structural variants, copy number variations, or those tricky tandem repeats, partly because accurately identifying those from short reads is still challenging, and we lack good mutation rate estimates for them. And finally, the current models implemented in Romedies are focused specifically on autosomal de novo and compound heterozygous inheritance patterns.
So it doesn't cover everything.
Right. It doesn't currently model, say, X-linked inheritance or recessive inheritance in the context of consanguinity-related parents, or mosaicism, where a mutation is present in only some of a person's cells. Those require different statistical approaches.
Okay. So important areas for future development. But even with those limitations, what's the most crucial message here for researchers and especially for patients and families waiting for answers?
I think the core message is really clear and powerful. Case-level diagnostic efforts, while still absolutely vital, are not enough on their own anymore. They must be supplemented by this kind of joint genomic analysis across diverse cohorts.
Combining individual expertise with large-scale data science.
Exactly. And the fact that Ramadies is open-source software plus its ability to work with those de-identified summary statistics, that's the real enabler here. It empowers researchers all over the world to pool their statistical findings, to combine data from many smaller, previously isolated cohorts without tripping over privacy barriers.
Fostering that global collaboration you mentioned.
Yes. It builds the statistical power needed to find these ultra-rare signals. It will undoubtedly accelerate gene discovery and ultimately lead to a much, much better diagnostic rate for rare diseases worldwide. It's about turning desperation into answers faster.
This deep dive really highlights it, doesn't it? By merging these large, diverse genomic data sets with truly cutting-edge statistical tools, we can start untangling the mysteries of ultra-rare diseases on a whole new scale. It's about spotting those hidden patterns, the connections that you just can't see when you're looking at one piece of the puzzle at a time. Moving from searching for the needle in the haystack to understanding the different types of haystacks where needles are most likely to be found.
That's a great analogy. And this whole approach, it promises to dramatically shorten that painful diagnostic odyssey for so many patients and their families, finally providing them with understanding and paving the way for potential future therapies.
Which brings us to a final thought. What does this powerful combination of big data and sophisticated analysis mean for the broader future of personalized medicine? Not just for these devastating rare diseases, but perhaps for unlocking the more subtle genetic contributions to all aspects of human health and common disease. This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science, base by base.